Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
We kick off with one for the dads. A huge happy Father's Day to all our dads in our Open House community. And to mark it, we're looking ahead to the next generation of fathers with some important insights and practical guidance for preparing our sons for life. Joining us is Dr. Michael O'Donnell, author, speaker, and the founding director of the Centre for Fathering. His groundbreaking research on adolescence has received international acclaim. Dr. Michael O'Donnell's latest of 8 books is What a Son Needs from His Dad, How a Man Prepares His Son for Life. Especially on a day like this, it's a call to dads to step up and take on this vitally important role for the sake of our families, for our society. Dr. O'Donnell, welcome to Open House.
Well, it is great to be with you. Now, I wanted to tell you that I, in the United States, for Father's Day, was born on Father's Day 56 years ago.
Well, happy Father's Day for your Father's Day.
I think I was destined to write about fathering.
Yes, I'm sure you were. I mentioned in your research on adolescence, what's that showing about how boys and young men are faring in today's world? There's quite an alarming figure you have about the amount of time men are spending with their boys.
Oh, absolutely. Dads listening to your program right now and moms who are interested in this research need to hear that dads are only spending less than 37 seconds a day of meaningful interaction.
Yeah.
That's shocking, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So it's not going to get the job done.
How long will it take for the job to be done?
Well, you know, I think what happens is that because men basically see themselves as the principal breadwinner, they're working really hard on the job, 9 to 5 or whatever the hours might be. When they come home, they basically give in nonverbal language, you know, the body language says, I gave it all at the office.
Yes.
I have nothing left over for you. And so I think dads have to begin to think about, wow, as much as I give my job, what do I want to begin to think about the things necessary to help my child feel approved, admired, and loved?
I'm sure you're sympathetic with dads, though, at the same time, because some days, most days, just feel like that I've given my all, 9 to 5 or probably longer.
I understand, and I think that most fathers believe that that's basically their job, right? That
yes.
They're the principal breadwinner and the disciplinarian of last resort. I'm sure you remember your mom saying, wait till your father gets home.
Yes.
So, you know, pretty frightening to think about. So I think dads have to think about, well, how can I join my wife in the parenting role and do some of the kinds of things that just aren't playing? Fathers think in terms of playing. Mothers think in terms of bathing, dressing, feeding, and tucking in at night, you know, those kinds of things.
Have you got practical suggestions about how that might happen then, on the back of probably an overloaded day out in the workforce?
Oh, absolutely, because the book was written for men, and that's why the book is not really long. It's about 141 pages, and it's chock full of examples. It has stories of fathers who have succeeded with their children and how we can emulate them. And then it has listed things we can do in a concrete way, because that's what dads want.
Yes.
They want to know, what exactly can I do that would be effective in raising the next generation? Fathers, particularly when they're with their child, need to play to that child's strength. You know, I might be good with computers, but if I have a son who loves to throw a football, then that's what we're going to do when we are together. Or if I have a child who likes theater, then when I'm with that child, then I want to think about engaging theatrical kinds of things. So we play to their strength, and in that way, they feel very approved and admired. Does that make sense?
Yes. Do you have suggestions about how dads are going to find the time and the energy to actually do that, to have a greater sense of interaction?
Well, I think that what fathers have to do is plan. You know, it's the kind of thing where we're going to have to look at our week and we're going to have to organize it. Yes, spontaneous is good, and we want to encourage fathers to be spontaneous, but they're going to have to look at their schedule for that week and begin to figure out, how can I block out some time to really devote to my child? And if they have more than one son, figuring out, you know, how can I have some time with this particular child and then some time with this particular child? Because often children are very different. You know,
yes.
They have different personalities, they have different likes. And so it's a strategy of figuring out how to tailor my time spent with that child that makes them feel loved by me.
Because in terms of a job, when you talk about work and a job, this is probably the most important job of all.
It is. But, you know, it's interesting because we are trained to be successful at our jobs, our employment, right, to bring home the money.
Yes.
But nobody really thinks about the most important job and who will give me the skills and the insights with which to win with my child. I can win at work, but sometimes I have insufferable feelings of insecurity when it comes to my children, which is why we deal with absent dads, or what we call phantom fathers. They're there but not engaged. Why? They don't know how to engage. Their fathers maybe didn't engage with them, and so they're only simply imitating what they learned from their dads.
Because the time of significant input in a father and child's life is pretty limited. It's pretty quickly over, isn't it?
You know, it's an amazing thing. Until you have children of your own, and I have a son now who's 23, could not have imagined how quickly the time would go by.
Yes.
And what I'm seeing now is that my relationship that I have with my son now, who's 23, I'm 56, began when he was an infant. You know, it was laying the foundation of being nurturing, available. And in fact, there are several things we can say to dads who I really hope are listening right now. Involvement, consistency, awareness, and nurturance. What we call I Can, developed by Ken Canfield to help fathers begin to think about four important ways to engage in the life of that child. Be involved, so you're going to have to spend time with them. Be consistent in what you tell them are your expectations and your discipline. Consistent in that you're there when you say you're going to be there. Be aware of what's happening in their life. Know who their friends are. Know what they like. Know what they aspire to become. And nurturing. I think that nurturing is often something we think that women do, but it's really something that a father needs to do, because according to the research, the more nurturing the father, the more masculine the son. How about that?
Yes. Again, because we're blokes, what do you do
right
to nurture? Okay, that's a very worthy and noble aim for a father and son, but how am I going to actually do that?
Okay, well, you know, I brought up Ken Canfield, who really has helped pioneer, together with me and others, this field of fathering, particularly in the United States, but now it's going abroad. But he talks about nurturance as expressed by attitudes, words, and actions. Nurturance can even be nonverbal, but should include affection. You know, we need to be appropriately affectionate with our sons. We need to have them feel as though we're supportive. So we're there at the after-school programs, and we're there for any significant religious occasions. Comfort in tucking them in at bedtime, holding them, rocking them, soothing them if they've gotten hurt, both physically and emotionally, and intimacy. Don't underestimate your actual physical presence. Sons tell us that having their father in the next room while they sleep is very reassuring to them.
How critical is it, or how necessary is it, for us to be open with our sons to let them know what we think and feel, maybe be a bit vulnerable. How much of a role might that play?
Boy, I'm really glad you brought that up because, you know, they can't read our minds. So every interaction with our son, they are basically wanting us to tell them what our expectations are for them. And, you know, part of it is that, you know, when it comes to Christianity or if it comes to working on a job, much of that is caught,
yes.
Not taught.
Yeah.
So it's the example we're living out, you know, while they're watching us on a daily basis.
What have been the things that you've advised your 23-year-old son, Michael, about his fathering and his future? What are the kind of dynamics that you've urged upon him, maybe even mentored him with?
You know, I think the most important thing, if you were to talk to him, that he noticed very early on was the love and respect I had for his mother.
Yes.
Loving his mother had a profound impact on him. And as mothers are listening to this program, it really began to teach my son, this is how you treat women in general. And I can begin to see it reflected in his dating relationships. Because the way I treated then his mom becomes an exemplar for how he should treat women in general. And I think of all the gifts that I gave him, loving his mother was the greatest.
How did you urge him to view himself, and how did you urge him to view God in his life and in this world?
Well, you know, the most important thing was that he needed to see that even though I'm a man, that going to church consistently, getting on my knees and having prayer, doing Bible study with other men was natural. You know, that it wasn't something that he was hearing his mother say to me, you know, begging me to do these things. These things were initiated by me. So he began to believe that this was a natural, inseparable part of what it meant to be a man. And so the wonderful thing with that is I got him around my male friends. And this enabled him to get a sense of spirituality is a part of what masculinity is all about. You know, it isn't just what women do.
It's undoubted the powerful role models that men set for their sons, but we're not perfect. And despite all our imperfections, when we're feeling acutely that like we're not perfect, we're not up to this job, how might we respond to that feeling?
Well, you know, that's where we're not alone. I have to tell folk that it wasn't what I knew, it's who I knew that made all the difference in the world. Having a personal relationship with Jesus Christ and knowing that there was a supernatural arena that I could go to that could give me insight through the Holy Spirit made all the difference in the world. To know that the Father of the universe, who created the world and everything in it, was available to me in prayer so that I could be equipped with insight and wisdom to raise my son successfully. That's powerful.
Yes.
So I think prayer, fathers listening, need to know that not only their prayers, but getting together with other men to pray for their children by name and for them to pray, obviously, for my child by name.
Michael, what do we teach our sons about work and money in their future lives?
You know, it's boy, that's the big, difficult thing in that we become, I think, as men, geared toward materialism. One of the things, and this is a very simple thing, you know, when your children are young, I mean, this works with both male and female, is to get three cups and kind of mark on the cup, you know, that one cup is your tithe for church, another cup is what we're going to save, and then another cup is whatever you want to spend, you know, for yourself. So that if they get a dollar, right, then they're going to put some money in for church, they're going to put some money in for savings, and they're going to put some money in for themselves, and they are beginning to learn early how to look at money as a tool for the kingdom, a tool that is to be used for the future. You're saving it. And then there's some money left over for personal enjoyment. So it's a little thing, but it's amazing how my son still to this day has that free cup model in his life.
How might they be guided best to not be consumed, as so many dads are, by their work, that we can encourage them to have a little left over for their families on the issue of work, which is so often so all-consuming?
Well, it's going to be the modeling again. Mm. Get files, literally a file with your son's name on it. You have a file maybe with your daughter's name on it, you know, but all the children files. And what you can begin to do is begin to think about what are the delights for that child. Maybe the son that we're raising loves football. So whenever I see an article about football, I'm going to cut that out. Even if I'm at work, I'm going to slip that in that folder. That's going to be a point of discussion when I find some free time with him. Or like with my daughter, I can, you know, maybe she likes horses. So, you know, even if I'm at work, I'm reading a magazine, I see an article on horses, I cut that out, I put that in her file, and then on the day that I've set to be with her, I pull that out and I say, I thought about you, I saw this, and I know you like horses, and that becomes a point of discussion.
The hardest thing you say a man has to do with his son is the birds and the bees.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of fear and trepidation with that one.
Yes.
You know, there's a funny story that is told about, you know, the little boy, Andrew, he comes up to his dad, and he asks, "Where did I come from?" You know, and the dad breaks out in a cold sweat and starts to go into the complicated process of reproduction. And the little boy, Andrew, says, no, I mean like Phil next door. He said he came from Chicago. So, you know, we have to make sure we're really understanding what the child is asking. And so I would say to dads, give them only what they need at what is the age that they're asking a particular question. You know, the younger the child, they don't need a lot of information. But I think that we need to be mature as they get older to talk about the body using language that is adult, so that they understand that the body is nothing to be ashamed of, and that God created it wonderfully, and that there are special parts of the body to be used within the bonds of matrimony.
And to have an acute insight into both his life and his character and the world in which he lives.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. You know, and I talk a lot about this in the book, the idea of citizenship and being a blessing in a particular community. One of the things that I tried to get Patrick to be aware of as a young boy is we have neighbors. And we tried to look and see, you know, down the street, we have a single parent, mother-only family. So I would talk to him about, what do you think are some of the things she's going to need help with? And we would talk about the lawn being mowed or snow being shoveled. I don't know how much snow you have in Australia, but obviously here in Colorado we have quite a lot.
Yes.
And so he and I would plan to go around the neighborhood and meet needs that he could assist me with that helped him to understand that work wasn't just about him, but it could be a basis of service to humanity.
Can I finally ask you about one thing I know you're passionate about, and that's the need for friendships with other boys and ultimately men.
Right.
And that's a challenge often for men, isn't it?
It is. You know, women seem naturally disposed to go and hang out with women. I know that my wife will come back after a couple of hours and I'll say, as a man, you know, what did you do?
Yes.
When men get together, we like to do things,
yeah.
Right? And she'll say, well, we didn't do anything, we talked.
Yes.
And I'll be like, the whole time? You know, it's like, I can't believe that. You know, we're guys, they've got to figure out, you know, how can we go and watch a football game, go camping, do some fishing, whatever. Mm. But I think what men need to learn is how do we have dialogue with each other? How can we begin to have conversation that enables us to draw strength from each other in terms of that really being an indispensable dynamic for friendship? And that's why in the back of the book, I have questions so that they can get together with other men and ask these questions and begin to hear from them, well, what did you do? How did you discipline your child? You know, it's very important at that point that older men be included in the process with younger men. Because older men, you know, they bring their critical and professional life experience, and they especially help that young father to understand that when it comes to discipline, there's just not one tool in the toolbox.
Yes, yeah.
Right? If all I know is a hammer, you know, I'm going to be doing a lot of damage. But an older dad can say, well, this is what I learned. Here are some other ways to discipline your child that worked. Now, I hope this doesn't sound like a stretch, you know, dads actually, men sitting around and talking. But I do think that what we call the new nurturing dad as a man understands now that there needs to be dialogue with other men, not just doing things together.
Yeah. Dr. Michael McDonald, there's a wealth of wisdom in this book. It's What a Son Needs from His Dad, How a Man Prepares His Son for Life. I'm so glad you've joined us on this Father's Day in Australia. Thank you so much for your time.
You bet.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.